Okay, page 10, 12. Last time we were learning about the kosher animals, the non-kosher animals. We discussed... Is that yours? We discussed whether they're a sign of making them kosher, or that's... In other words, are the two things, chuk, cut, and split hooves, is that what makes it kosher? Or it's kosher anyway, we just know it's kosher from the fact that it chooses cut and split hooves. We also discussed, in the spiritual sense, what chewing the cud means, what split hoofs means in their spiritual thing. We also spoke about the few animals that have only one of the two kosher signs. Like the chazir is the only animal that has split hoofs, but it doesn't chew its cud. And then the gamel, that neves, and shofan, those three animals, they chew their cud, but don't have split hoofs. Right? And we said that these are the only four animals in the world. The only four animals in the world that I only have one of the two. Which itself shows the Torah has to be from Hashem, because the Torah was given in this desert, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, these are the only animals in the world that have one of the two signs. How would he know what animals they're going to discover all around the world? So obviously, this has to come from Hashem. Okay, and we said also the unique evil of a pig is that he sticks out his hoofs to say, you see, I'm a kosher. You know, I'm a kosher animal. Okay, Pasuk Tes. We're up to Pasuk Tes in page 10-12. Okay? After the Torah finishes with the kosher animals, or the non-kosher animals. By the way, we didn't finish this yet. The last three words of the previous pasuk, it says, "Uvenivlasim leisigo," you can't touch the dead carcass of an animal. Now, the only ones that are obligated in not becoming tamei is only kohanim when they have to work in the Beis Hamikdash. So Rashi brings down from the Gemara this pasuk that says you cannot touch the dead carcass, the nevela of an animal. Refers in the time of Yom Tov. That's the only time Jews are obligated not to become Tamei, because they have to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. If you're Tamei, you're not allowed to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, Rashi brings down Rabbi Senu Pirish Berego, okay, but not a whole year. The only ones that are warned a whole year about not becoming impure are Kohanim. A Yisrael, there's no problem becoming Tamei, except in the time of Yom Tov, when they have to go up to the Beis HaMikdash. What's another interesting, unique din, by the way, people could become Tamei when they're alive, or when they're dead. But certain Zava, Nida, of a person touches a dead body, they become Tamei. Right? Living people could become Tamei, dead people are Tamei. Right? But a living person... Animals can never become tummy. A living animal is never tummy.
You not get tummy?
No. If you touch a living animal, you never become tummy. Not only that, any living animal is not tummy. The dead animal,
yes.
If you touch it, because a nevela, by the way, is what's called av hatuma, the main category of tuma. So if a person touches a nevela, they become tummy, they become a rishon. A person and utensils minatayra could only become tamei from something called an avhatuma. Okay? The mess, dead body itself, is called avi avaisatuma. That's the ultimate level of impurity. But a living animal, it's interesting, a living animal can never become tamei. Even if a dead body touches a living animal, it's not tamei. The only living creature in the world that could become tamei is a human. And by the way, it's interesting. Even by humans, there's no din of tuma by a guy when they're alive. For instance, a woman, let's say, a non-Jewish woman's nida is not tummy. There's no din of all these, zav, all these things.
She's not tummy?
She's not tummy as far as those tumas are concerned.
So even if a guy touch a dead body, is that tummy?
No.
If the like
the guy doesn't become tummy. A living guy can never become tummy.
If the
One second. Let's say, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, okay, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that women, when they're in Nida, would wear special garments that everybody should know they're Nida. Why? Today on the country, nobody's supposed to know. Why? Because in the olden times, if a woman was in Nida, and somebody touched her, they became Tomei.
Seven people.
Huh?
Seven person would become Tomei from that lady, no? It's like somebody would touch her, then another person touched him, named only one person?
Because a person could only become Tomei from an Avad Tumah. So, or let's say, if a person touched a man that was Tomei, a Zav, let's say, right? So then, he couldn't go into the Beis HaMikdash. If you give Shalom Aleichem to a man that was Tomei, you're not allowed to eat Truma if you're a Kohen, you couldn't eat Karbonis, you're not allowed to walk into his capital punishment. So in the olden times, people had to know if they were Tomei, other people had to know, there was no choice. Okay. But a guy, if you gave Shalom Aleichem to a guy, well, I don't know if you gave Shalom Aleichem, you said hello to a guy, so it doesn't make you Tomei. I'm talking even the time of the Beis HaMikdash.
But now that...
Even, one second, a dead body of a guy makes you Tomei. The only question which is an argument to Rav Shimon bar Yochai and the Chachamim, and we paskin like Rav Shimon bar Yochai, is that if there's a dead body in the same room, see, God forbid there's a dead body, a dead body in this room, right? Everybody that's under the same roof is Tomei. Right? But that doesn't apply to a guy. If a dead guy would be in a room, yeah, and nobody touches it, just under the same roof, they would not become Tomei. Only a guy is only, because over there it says, Adam ki yamuz ba'oil, in Parshas Chukas, Adam. And the Gemara says only a Jew is called Adam. Ha Adam is Goyim. Adam is a Jew. So only a Jew makes you Tomei under the same tent. But touching makes you Tomei. But a living non-Jew is also not Tomei. Only a Jew is Tomei. I'll give you another example while we're off topic anyway. A Jew, when they wake up in the morning, has to wash in the Tila, right? Mm-hmm. They have to wash Nagel Vasir. Why do you have to wash Nagel Vasir? Because your tummy, the hands are tummy, right? A guy doesn't have to wash Nagel Vasir. You know, people are very careful that before you wash Nagel Vasir, you don't touch food, you don't touch this, you don't touch that, right? Because you don't want to make it with the evil Ruach Ra. But you have a housekeeper that's going to make a salad for you. You don't have to make her wash Nagel Vasir.
But if you touch somebody, but you don't do it, that's what you're doing.
So the tumah you don't become. There's a ruach ra, but there's no tumah on it. But a Jew, there's tumah. Why? So it's interesting. It says in halach even, in Shulchan Aruch it says, and definitely in the more spiritual svarim, it says tumah sets in where kedusha was and leaves. In other words, a Jew, because they have a neshama, so when the neshama leaves at night, goes up. So then, because there's a vacuum now, so tumah sets in. And therefore, when you get up, it leaves, except on the fingertips, so you need to wash in the tilas yadayim. But something that doesn't have kedusha to begin with, in a certain respect, doesn't have tumah either. But a dead body of a goy, dead body, but of an animal, those things. So the Torah says, uvinevlosim leisi go, you can't touch the dead carcass of an animal. But Rashi says, that only applies to regular Jews, Levim and Yisraelim, only on Yom Tov, when they had to go, you know, but...
So what do you do if you have a Jewish worker and they don't do Netilah in the morning?
So, in the Poskim they write, inevitably they did wash their hands in the morning. Maybe not the proper way, but they did wash their hands. I mean, obviously some people wash their hands. But you should know in the matzah bakeries... All the matzah bakeries that have these women, in Yiddish it's called valgerin, you know, rolling the dough.
Yeah.
Let's see, they have women in the bakeries, a lot of them are like Russians. When they come in the morning in the matzah bakeries, before they start working, every worker lines up by the sink and washes nagavat. They don't care if you're from, not from, they don't differentiate. Because they're going to say, oh, you, yeah, nah, you know. They make everybody wash in the Tilth Yadayim.
Uh-huh. What if they wear gloves?
So somebody, you wear gloves, it's different, but when they roll the mat, they don't wear gloves. Okay, let's go right there. Pasuk Tes. Zeh teich lo mikol asher b'mayim. This is what you're allowed to eat of the things in the water. Kol asher lo snapi v'kaskeses, if it has fins and scales, teichelu you're allowed to eat. V'chol asher ein lo snapi v'kaskeses, lo teichelu, you can't eat it. Tamei hu lochem. Again, tamei hu lochem does not mean that it's impure. Tamei hu lochem means that you're not allowed to eat it. Here the Torah refers to tamei, it's impure to eat. Now the Mishnah says an interesting halacha: any fish that has scales has fins. So even though the Torah says you need fins and scales to make it kosher, but halachically the Mishnah says any fish that has scales automatically has fins. So you don't have to look for the fins. If it has fins, that doesn't necessarily mean that it has scales. Okay? Now, it says an interesting thing, okay, in Parshas Shmini, which is also where all these laws are really the same, over there the Torah says an interesting thing. Kol asher ein lo snapi v'kaskeses b'mayim shekutzu lochem. If it doesn't have fins and scales in the water, there are certain fish they bring down that shed the scales when they come out of the water. But the Torah says, Rashi says in Parshas Shmini, some species shed their scales when they leave the water. This verse indicates that the kashrus requirement of scales is only when the fish are in water. If they leave the water and they don't have any scales anymore, as long as they had the scales in the water,
that's good.
It's kosher. I don't know of any examples of this, but it needs to have fins and scales.
So basically, they ate sushi for that type of fish.
I don't know if they ate sushi then, but whatever. Okay, now, another interesting difference between fish and animals. We know animals you need to shecht. Birds you need to slaughter. Beasts, wild animals, domestic animals, right? Chabei, mechaya, oif, they all need to be shecht. What's the story with fish? Do you have to shecht them or don't you have to shecht them? So the Rambam says an interesting expression. The Rambam writes that the gathering them out of the water is their shechita. Which implies an interesting thing. The Rambam seems to imply they need shechita, but removing them from the water is the shechita. What would it matter? I mean, it's far-fetched case, would you be allowed to eat a fish in the water?
No.
So according to this, that the removal of the fish from the water is the shechita of the fish, right? So then, based on that, you wouldn't be allowed to eat a fish. I mean, how can you open your mouth and eat a fish in the water? But I'm saying, yeah, but would you open your mouth and then swallow a whale?
No.
Or shark? Shark's not kosher. Huh?
Some people eat little fish, live little fish for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, but they're out of the water already.
Unless in the water, it's
top of that. Ah, but again, Lepreel, the removal of them from the water, that is the shechita for fish. Now, the question is like this, just to get in a practical level. Can you buy filleted fish in a supermarket? Let's say they tell you, we know tuna is, whatever the lists of this the fish, right? There's tuna, there's trout. Can I go into a supermarket and buy trout fillet, let's say? So the problem is, they tell me it's trout. Yeah? How do I know it's trout?
They see it, no?
No, there's a scandal not long ago in one of these fish. Restaurants are fish, you know?
Seafood restaurants,
they were giving you imitation stuff. It's very interesting. According to halacha, you have to see at least the scales on the fish. So if the skin is still on, so you go into a store, and you see the skin is still on the fish. And by touching the skin, you can tell that there were scales there, because you could tell by touching the skin if there were scales there or not, because some of them even come off on your hand. Then al pidin, you can eat the fish.
What about salmon?
So I'm saying, but without that, if there's no skin on the fish, because the Torah says it's a biblical doubt, so to speak, you need fish, fins and scales is a biblical thing, not a rabbinic thing. So unless if you know for sure the fish has scales, then you're not allowed to eat it. So if you see the skin on the fish and you can feel that there are scales, used to be there at least, then it's fine. Some people want to say, and some people are doubting it, or some people don't doubt it, whatever.
If it's a
non-kosher place. Yeah, no, a kosher fish market has hashkacha, so therefore you know it has supervision. Yeah. So you know all the fish they bring in are kosher. But for instance, salmon, a lot of people want to say that because salmon is a unique fish, there's no other fish that looks like salmon. So therefore, if you can know that this is salmon, so then apidin, you're allowed to eat it, even though it's filleted. So the issue is like this. When they cut the fish, yeah, first of all, they have knives that they only cut fish. The guy doesn't cut his cheeseburger with the knife that they cut the fish. It's cold, it's clean. So some people, if they buy, let's say, a big piece of fish from a trefa store, they'll cut off a drop at the end. Slice. Where the knife touched, what's called kadei klipa, a very thin piece that, it, you know, you cut off a slice, a very, very thin slice. So then they'll do it. But I'm saying the issue with... No, it doesn't matter. It's all cold. It's not a real big deal. What?
You don't know if the knife has hit the non-kosher meat.
Right. I'm saying even if it did, but they're not going to take a dirty knife. They're going to take a clean knife, and it's cold, so even though there's pressure of the knife, so obviously it's best to buy fish and from a kosher market. I'm just saying, what's happening? You're stuck somewhere. There are people that are stuck. I know Chabad Shluchim are stuck in Hicksville, USA.
Wichita.
Wherever, and they don't have kosher markets, you know, fish. Here you have Baruch Hashem in LA, you go to all the kosher markets, you have all the fish you want.
We have one kosher restaurant.
Yeah, so I'm saying, and how many kosher fish stores? So then, I mean, people rely on those leniencies, if you can tell us. But a regular fish, you should know.
So in this case, you're getting sushi.
Why?
Because you know the salmon, the guy, sashimi, he cut the fish and you eat it in any non-kosher restaurant, no?
No, because how do they cook the rice?
No rice, sashimi. That means just...
Raw fish.
Raw fish.
Yeah, but they probably put some treif
in the middle of nowhere.
And you for sure won't have a sushi restaurant.
Why? It's not so simple. What?
Why they put two sun signal for the kosher fish?
Because
only a scale is enough.
No. There's two issues over here. When you send meat, cheese, fish, Shulchan Aruch says if you're sending it through a goy, you need to have a double seal, a double sign on it. Because otherwise, we're afraid the guy took it out and put something trace inside.
What did you say, Rabbi? Meat, fish, and what?
Cheese. For instance, a lot of times, by the way, and this is a very big problem, sometimes you order from the restaurants. This happened here in LA. I mean, a lot of times, and the Rabbanim scream about it, and they scream at the Achshedim, and you order from a meat restaurant, takeout. Yeah? And they send it and deliver it. And the delivery guy is a guy. He's not Jewish. And they don't seal it. You know, if they tape it, you know, a lot of times they'll send a, but then they'll put a tape over it, right? That you could tell if it was torn or not, right? So then you have the seal, the closing of the container. You know those containers they send out, okay?
Yeah.
So that the actual container is one seal, but then you need to tape it. Because al pidin, you can be afraid. It's called basar shina salam and ayin, meat that was left out, concealed from that. We're afraid a guy changes the meat. It's a big problem, but people are unaware of this. If you have a housekeeper, yeah, and you have meat out, and they know you're going to be out for a very long time, In halacha, it's a question if you could eat that meat. Unless if you know for sure the way you left it, where you, how you left it, how it was packed, how it was cut, in a way that if they did anything, you would know it. But there's all the halachic journals that talk about, they call it Shabbos Made Easy, M-A-I-D, Made Easy. You know, there's a lot of issues, Basa Shina Salim and Ayin and things. In fact, the guy called me, a Chabad guy called me today. He visits a guy in jail, a Jew in jail, and he brought him cold cuts in a package. And they had to verify if they can bring it in or not. And they didn't allow, at the end, they didn't allow the prisoner to eat it. But so they get back to the rabbi. So it was out of his sight for an hour, this package of cold cuts, okay, that he brought this prisoner. They didn't let the prisoner, I don't know why, but they didn't let the prisoner. So he asked me, can he use this meat? So then there's a heter that if you could recognize the way you packaged it, and it wasn't changed at all, that you can tell it wasn't opened, because even when they wrap these things, a lot of times if they open, you can tell that it was opened. So then I'll be then, you can read the evidence, you can rely on it, that is good. But people have to know that this fish need a seal, you can't send fish delivery with a non-Jew, if it's a Jewish guy, it's no problem. I'm saying if it's a non-Jewish guy, you have to seal it. You have to wrap it in a way, or we're going off topic. You have a Shabbaton, yeah, or you have you're making a bar mitzvah wedding in a hotel. And they bring the meat to the hotel, yeah? So, and you're putting it in the hotel's refrigerator. And then half a day later, the caterer comes and starts preparing the food, right? So you have to make sure the boxes are sealed. Or if you have leftover stuff and you're going to take it home the next day, you need to make sure it's sealed. And that's the job of the mashgiach, by the way, to make sure the stuff is sealed, because otherwise we're afraid that somebody can exchange this for that and it wouldn't be kosher. Anyway, let's not...
So, all right. Let me ask you. So, once the fish is out of the water, you are allowed to kill it any way you want?
Usually when it's out of the water, it's dead already.
No.
In 10 minutes, 5 minutes.
No, what 5 minutes?
Doesn't mean sometimes more than 5 minutes.
Okay, once it's out of the water, it's probably gross. But if you want, you're allowed to eat it once it's out of the water.
I know. So, but they don't have any in the Talmud how you should kill it.
No.
They put the hammer. They put in the head of them and the chin.
Right? Yes, that's in the head. You know, even in Shechita. Well, we're on the animal story. You know, when you shech the chicken, it flaps for 2 seconds. You know, a few seconds. If you ever go to a schlachter's where they slaughter meat, in the slaughterhouse of meat, after they shech the animal, the bull, let's say, or the cow, whatever, it can move around for 5-10 minutes, and it's moving around. It's really shaking. And al pidin, you're allowed to eat it. Well, you can't eat it raw, but I'm saying, let's say you could eat it raw, right? You would be allowed to eat it because it's dead, even though it's moving around. That was the argument.
It's not dead.
That was the argument between Yosef and his brothers. Yosef and the brothers. Yosef used to snitch on the brothers. One of the things he said to Yaakov that the brothers do is they eat Avim and Achai. They eat a live limb off an animal. So the first thing discussed, Chas Hashem, the Shvatim would eat. Evim and Achai is one of the 7 Noahide laws. Forget Torah, but how would they do it? So they say that Yosef and the brothers had a halachic argument. If after you shech the animal, while it's moving around, it doesn't say it's really fresh then, right? It's moving around, if you're allowed to eat it or not. The brothers maintain you are allowed to eat it because it's dead. Yosef maintained not. The brothers were right, so they were eating the meat what they were allowed to eat. And Yosef snitched to Yaakov that they were eating, gave him an achai. But the halacha is considered dead. Okay, right
there. When you said about, let's say, if someone's at a hotel and they have extra food on Shabbos that they're going to take home after, so they're allowed to seal it twice on Shabbos?
No, you can have a guy sealing it with tape or whatever. Okay, now goes to the birds. So we did the animals and the fish. Now we're going to the birds. Now what's interesting about the birds, before we even begin, the Torah gives signs of kosher animals, chooses cut and has split hooves. The Torah gives signs for fish, fins and scales. For birds, there are no signs. The Torah doesn't give a definition of what a kosher... What are you looking at? 10-12. The Torah doesn't give a sign what defines a kosher animal, a kosher bird or non-kosher bird. What the Torah does over here, as we'll soon see, the Torah enumerates all the non-kosher birds. Why does the Torah enumerate the non-kosher birds? So the Gemara says, because the Torah likes to make everything short and sweet. So if there's more kosher birds than non-kosher birds, the Torah is going to mention the non-kosher birds. If there would be more non-kosher birds than kosher birds, the Torah would say only the kosher birds. The Torah says the least of the animals. The Torah is going to enumerate a whole bunch of birds which are not kosher, which means, by definition, all the other birds in the world are kosher. But the Poskim write, the Chazal write, that because we're not sure what these birds that the Torah enumerates are, that they say are not kosher, you're only allowed to eat birds which are tradition, what's called Meseder tradition, that you're allowed to eat. So friends, we know chicken, we know pigeons, we know even turkey. Turkey, the descendants of the Shalah, don't eat turkey. The Marshal, Reb Shlomo Luria, who was the same time with the Beis Yosef in that era, he maintained turkey is not kosher. The Halach is not like him, except the descendants of the Shalah, they have their tradition and their family, they don't eat turkey. But turkey in the world today is accepted as a traditional kosher bird. But there's no sign to look at a bird in the wild and say, 1 minute, is it a kosher bird or not? There's no way you can tell. It's what's called Meseda, it's tradition. Okay, the Torah says,
Kotzi. Are those, with the chicken and the pigeon, are they a little nicer than the other birds?
People want to say, but that's not what makes it or breaks it. The fact is that the birds that we eat traditionally are not the prey birds like the eagles and the vultures and all the fighting birds. And it's predators, and it says because you are what you eat. So if you can eat a predator animal, so you become a predator, you eat a nice animal, you become a nice person. Whatever. Okay. Kol tzipor teilu techelu, all the kosher birds you're allowed to eat. These are
only chicken and pigeon? That's it?
Dove.
Dove.
Duck.
Pigeon.
Turkey.
Ostrich?
Yes. No, ostrich is three. That's why, because an ostrich is a non-kosher bird, an ostrich egg... Huh?
Don't they raise them in Israel?
Yeah, in the non-kosher kibbutz. Peacock's not kosher. Okay.
Sparrow is also, right?
Stork.
Storks bring babies. These are the ones you're not allowed to eat. Okay? And I'm going to translate in the English over here, but there's a lot of debates, even they bring down in the other places, the questionable what these animals are. But theory defines them like this. You can, it's so funny. In the English, he translates with the Hebrew word. Nashe, Peres, Aznia, and all that. But in Parsha Shmini, okay, it discusses like this. The Nesher, here it says also Nesher. Nesher is usually agreed that it's the eagle or the bald eagle. Even though Tesis, in modern day Hebrew, Nesher is an eagle.
If they eat the meat...
No, 1 second. Tosfos and Chulin disagrees that a Nesher is not an eagle. But here it says, most people say that the Nesher is an eagle. Next, Peres. No, I'm sorry. Veso Ayom, which is the Ra, by the way. Rashi says, Ra and Daya is the same thing. Why is it called Ra? Because the sea is very far away.
Boss.
Okay? Now, he brings down here, I'm looking in the, there's a, the article has, I'm just on Vayikra, then they finished, but it says like this. The Da in, over here is called Ra'a. Okay? Rashi says the same bird. So according to Rav Sadia, this is a bird called the kite. I don't know what that is. The Al-Bag translated to mean the vulture. Okay? Now, why is it called Ra? Listen to this. See, the Talmud comments that this bird that's called Ra has the ability to see a carcass from a very great distance, from Bavel all the way to Eretz Yisrael. This is what the Gemara says in Chulin, Samach Gimel. That this Ra, why is it called Ra? See? It could see a dead piece of meat from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Since vision is such a great gift, so why is it a treifa bird? It's a good bird. So they say like this, it's only seeing dead carcasses instead of constructive things. Remarkable concept, they say. Osnaim Latayra says this. Why, what's so bad? If Ra means it can see very far, it should be a mila, not a chasan, it should be an advantage. But it only sees death, it only sees negativity. Somebody that sees only negativity is not a kosher bird. You have to be able to see the positive. You have to be able to see the good in anything, and if not, not. Okay, next. Ve'ez kol erev lemine, all the erev. Erev usually is translated to be a raven. Okay? Again, Rabbeinu Tam and Taisis also disagrees, but doesn't say what it is. Ve'ez Basayano. Basayano is the ostrich, by the way. Ve'ez Atachma says Hashochaf. Tachmos is, let's see if he has that here. No, he doesn't have Tachmos here. But Rashi says,
Let me ask you.
One second.
Two words.
One?
If you're saying that there are two different words that mean the same bird in there, right?
Yeah.
All right. So then, the birds we don't know, what if it's the bird that we don't know happens to be a chicken? I mean, chicken too, but we just don't know.
No, but the Torah is telling us the non-kosher birds, but it doesn't mean no. None of them mean, but like we said, it's tradition handed down that a chicken is a kosher bird. Okay, then it says like this, Vesa Shochaf, Vesa Nate, as a Nate is a sparrowhawk. Again, Tesis questions it. Vesa Kate is a Sholoch, Kate is, Kais and Yanshuf, by the way, are night birds. And then Rashi says like this, both birds howl at night, have cheeks that are similar to those of human. It's the owl and the great horned owl. According to Rabag, causes the falcon. And here's an interesting thing of Shalach. And this is a very interesting bird. Rashi says, what's Shalach? It's Hashayla dogim in ayam. It's a bird that has a big beak. It dives into the river and it goes fishing. It grabs a fish and it eats it. Okay? So what is this? It's a pelican or a heron or a cormorant. These are the type of birds. But it says an interesting thing. Rashi says from the Gemara in Chulin, it's Shayla dogim in ayam. Rabbi Yochanan says in the Gemara over there in Chulin, a very interesting statement. He says, if you see a shalach bird, if you see this, what bird do they call it usually that we know? A pelican, right? Long beak and it dives into the water and grabs fish. He said, you should say the pasuk, Mishpatecha Tohoim Rabo. Hashem, your judgment is in the depth of the sea. What does this mean? So it says, the Gemara explains, and Rashi over there explains it, that there is a mishpatachot, there is a judgment from God, which fish should be eaten by which bird at which time.
Wow.
That's what the Gemara says in Chulin. And he calls the pasuk Rabbi Yochanan, Kavachoz Shalach, when he saw this bird called Shalach, he said, God, mishpatachot, look how great you are. You judge even the depth of the sea. And Rashi in the Gemara explains, what does it mean? There's a din umishpat, there's a judgment, and each fish, which fish should be caught at which time. The Alter Rebbe used that Gemara that we just quoted, this Rashi, to prove a major concept of the Baal Shem Tov. The Rambam writes, and even though it's exactly questionable what the Rambam means by this, the Rambam writes, Hashkocha Pratis, divine providence, is only on mankind. According to the Rambam, simply, because the Rebbe explains, the Rebbe has a long, 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 long explanation that he wrote before he became Rebbe about the various four opinions of Hashkocha Pratis. It's a very beautiful, long thing about the four opinions about divine providence. The way the world learns the Rambam says there's only divine providence on mankind, that's it. Not in animals, not in plants, not in inanimate. The Baal Shem Tov said, there's Hashkocha Pratis, there's divine providence, and every single creature that exists in the world. Whether it's inanimate, plant, animal, and human, the Baal Shem Tov said that even if you see a leaf blowing over in the wind from one side to the other side, you should know that's divine providence. And not only is it divine providence at this particular leaf, at this particular time, should be blown by this particular wind, it's also connected to the entire master plan of the whole universe. That's what the Baal Shem Tov said. So when they asked Alter Rebbe, what's the proof of the Baal Shem Tov? Where do you find the proof in Torah for what the Baal Shem Tov said? Now Alter Rebbe quoted this Gemara about the Shalach, and he said, the Shalach is this bird that gathers the fish from the water, and the Gemara says, Rabbi Yechon said, Mishpatechot Tohim Rabba, there's a judgment from Hashem, which fish should be caught at which time. So you see clearly that there's divine providence, not only on mankind, but even on the animal kingdom, even on fish. And what's interesting, this concept that you learn at Hashkocha Pratis is learned from a treifa fish, I mean a treifa bird. Not from a kosher bird, from a treifa bird. That means even a treifa bird brings out the divine providence of God. Now it's not only holy things bring out the providence of God, divine providence of God. Even everything in the world, even the non-kosher things, also reveal this particular greatness of Hashem.
It should be.
Huh?
It should be.
It should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you believe that every single thing in the world, its existence, is because there's a power of Hashem in it, constantly keeping it in existence. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Lo'elam Hashem, Devar Chod Nitzav B'Shamayim. Forever God, your words are standing in the heaven. What does it mean? Forever God, your words are standing in the heaven. So, the Baal Shem Tov, but it's really a Medrash Tehillim, the Medrash in that pasuk in Kuf Yutes. The Medrash says that what does it mean that God forever your words are standing in the heaven? That your words that you said 5,700 whatever years ago, let there be a heaven, that power is constantly in the heaven keeping it in existence. Because if that power of Hashem would leave for 1 second, it would disappear. Okay? And Alter Rebbe when Shai Yichud Vamoni explains that when you have, let's say, Kriyas Yamsuf, not long ago we read, yeah? So the sea split, and there was a strong eastern wind that made the water stand. And then, when the Jews crossed, Hashem took away the wind, it says, and the water came back to its original nature. Bechlal, you don't need the Kriyas Yamsuf to prove it. I mean, Alter Rebbe uses that example, because it's a Torah example. If you have a dam in the water, yeah, you have a river and you build a dam to create electrical power. That dam stops the water. Yeah? And now the water is standing up straight. The dam could be in the water for 100 years, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, it doesn't matter. The second you take away the dam, the water doesn't keep standing. It immediately goes back. In 2 seconds, you can't even tell there was once a dam there. Right? Why is that? Because the nature of water is to flow. You want to change the nature to make it stand, you need a constant power in it, making it exist. The second that power is taken away, it's done. The same thing, Lamashal, if you throw a ball up in the air, how long would the ball go up in the air for? For the amount of pressure and power you put into the ball. The second your power is over, the ball comes back down. When the ball comes back down, it's as if it never went up. Why? Because of gravity, whatever the reason is. The nature of the ball is to be down here. Because everything is on the ground. It's gravity. You want to go against its nature, you need to have a constant power in it, keeping it existing. Okay, now, before God created the world was nothing. It's not like a carpenter takes an existing piece of wood, shapes it into a table, knocks in some nails, whatever, and he makes a table. The only thing he did was change the form from this shape to this shape. But it was existing before him. Therefore, the carpenter can build the table, go home, and the table stands. Yeah? But before Hashem created the world was nothing. So the world, by nature, is nothing. You want to change nothing into something, so you have to have a constant power in it, keeping it something. Because the world by nature is nothing. Hashem created yesh mi'ayin, so it's an ayin. So if you want to make something, change the opposite from nothing to something, just like you're changing the nature from flowing to standing or up to down, so then you have to have a constant force in it. Therefore the Baal Shem Tov said, this is what the Medrash says. That words that you, which words? The words that you said, Yehirokia, this is what the Medrash says in Tillim. Those words that you said, let there be a heaven, are constantly standing in the heaven, because if they would leave for 1 second, the world wouldn't exist. Now, if this thing, its existence, is depending on the power of God in it, any movement, anything that it does, is dependent on God. So therefore, from the Shalach, you see it from the Gemara's perspective, that not only on mankind is there Hashkocha Prata, divine providence, but even on something like a bird and a fish, there is a judgment from Hashem which fish is going to be eaten by which bird and which time. So this is a proof that the Rebbe brought from the Gemara for the concept of Hashkocha Pratis. Then you have the Kav, Esrachama.
Why the kosher bird? They talk about kosher, but it's easier, much more easier to say, oh, not kosher. Why they say that?
Because it's the least. That means there's more kosher birds in the world than what?
Non-kosher.
Oh, I thought you have.
Non-kosher bird. This is non-kosher bird.
These are all the non-kosher. That means every other bird that's not these is kosher.
We have only 5 or 6 kosher birds. We don't have
right, so it says, why do we have so few kosher birds? Because we don't know what these birds are. And therefore, you can only go by tradition. Because we don't know which were the kosher birds. If the Torah would say a sign, you know, then you know, you look at the bird,
that's it.
You see right away if it's kosher or not. But Hashem doesn't. He just, these birds you can't eat. All the other birds you could eat. So you need to know which one's which.
Except this four kind of bird that we already use it. Is any other kind of kosher bird that exists?
That Jews don't eat?
Yeah.
Can't be. Jews know anything when it comes to food.
I heard that they haven't found an animal yet that hasn't fit the description.
I said that. That proves the Torah is definitely from heaven. What?
Why is it though that with the birds there's this issue? We don't have that issue with the fish and the animals, right?
What do you mean?
That we don't know what they... So we have such a limited amount. birds that we eat.
We just don't know. The Torah doesn't say.
But why is it just the birds
like that? I don't know. What? Those are five signs that the birds that we have traditionally, they have certain things in common. But that doesn't make it or break it. Even the mushroom turkey. By the way, thank God turkey is a kosher bird, because if not Thanksgiving, a lot more Jews would be eating treif. At least they're eating kosher turkey. But they said the shalom maintained that a turkey is not traditionally a kosher bird. And until today, the descendants of the Shiloh don't eat it.
What are the descendants of Shiloh?
They won't eat turkey roll, they won't eat turkey. No.
Exceed the.
Huh?
Who are they now?
I know we had a bunch of counselors here from the camps. I know a bunch of people that come from the Shiloh, they don't eat it.
Descendants of Shiloh?
Yeah. They know this tradition in the family, they don't eat. It's passed over from father to, you know, mother or daughter, whatever. The parents to children.
They don't miss anything.
But turkey, but the filling, the stuffing. You got the turkey, the stuffing.
The amount of turkey that is being used in Israel.
Yeah, in Israel,
in Israel, they eat turkey because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
You get much more for your money. So all the yeshiva bochum, that's all they get a whole day is turkey. And the girls in the seminary too, because it's cheaper.
Healthy.
It's healthy because it's leaner.
Smell is not good.
Whatever.
They're making sleeping pills from the breast of a turkey.
Yeah.
Sleeping pills?
Yeah, tryptophan.
Okay.
Sorry, you just said the same thing I just said?
The what?
That turkey has something that puts people to sleep?
She said they make sleeping pills from the turkey breast of the turkey.
Something about it that...
L-tryptophan. Okay, we'll leave it with the tray for birds.